Good afternoon, Your Honors, and good afternoon, Counsel. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve maybe 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Wynn Eaton, and I represent Ruben.
I'd like to make one point, which is I'm not sure you really need 15 minutes in this case, and if you don't, I'd appreciate it if you take it. Thank you.
Okay. I'm having a little trouble hearing, Your Honor.
All I said was that I'm not sure you actually need 15 minutes in this case. I'm not sure why we have it down for that much argument. And if you don't need it, it would be better if you don't take it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, at any rate, I represent the petitioner. I'll refer to him as Ruben. This case involves the reinstatement of a removal order against an individual who for 20 years and with minimal literacy in English language represented himself. Ruben trusted that the U.S. legal system would treat him fairly and would protect him from the grave harm he faced in El Salvador, but it did not. I'd like to focus my time today on the immigration judge's erroneous denial of protection under the Convention Against Torture. Ruben was forced to join a gang as a youth in El Salvador and forcibly branded for life with gang tattoos, which he still has today. And later, when he refused to help the gang, they slashed his throat and shot his father. He moved around all over the country trying to avoid the gang. He's never committed a crime in furtherance of the gang objectives, and that's in the record at 49 and 50. He was deported in 2017 and was immediately recognized by an officer at the repatriation center in San Salvador as being in danger of being killed, and that's in the record at 48. He lived in hiding for a short time before being returned to the United States to seek safety once again. And even an El Salvadorian consulate, after he returned here, recognized the serious harm that Ruben faced, and that's in the record at 48. I have three topics that I'd really like to present, but in order of priority, I don't think we'll get to anything but the CAT denial. So we'll begin focusing on that. The failure of the immigration judge and the BIA to consider evidence in the record in the applicable law as interpreted by this court in Cole v. Holder is the primary issue. The immigration judge adopted early on at a master county.
Isn't there a large problem with that, which is when was Cole decided? I think in 2003.
Yeah, Cole was decided in 2011, I believe, the Cole v. Holder.
2011, all right. But the record was from was the record from the same time period? It's a different country, wasn't it? A different country?
Yeah, well, it's Honduras is where Cole v. Holder pertains, but
right, it's a different country. So I don't understand how we can rely on the record in that case.
Well, Your Honor, what we're talking about is the same MS-13 gangs and the other gangs. Sometimes the same individuals operating across the common border and in assaulting the same victims and perpetrating the same crimes with sometimes the same guns and the same drugs. And then when we look at the country conditions report that was also ignored throughout the record here at the 337, 344, 345, 351, they also indicate that the same issues are in El Salvador as they are in Honduras. So I don't see that that Cole v. Holder doesn't apply by application on these same facts.
But to me, the bigger problem is that the IJ's opinion doesn't contain a great deal of what was in the record about what happened to him.
Well, early on, as I was saying, Your Honor, the immigration judge seemed to adopt the philosophy that DHS advanced at 173 to discount persecution that occurred prior to petitioner's removal in 2017. And that's at 174, 75, and 76 is that conversation. And then that contrasts strongly with the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision in Nostrala, where prior facts must be considered for CAT. CAT is not a removal order, it's a deferral. And so we're not talking about reopening a removal order with this argument on CAT. We have to go back and reference Reyes-Melendez, Lopez-Reyes, V-I-N-S, back to Wang, V-I-N-S.
I don't read the opinion that way. He doesn't say the earlier material is irrelevant. He just doesn't seem to think that it carries much weight, but he's accurate about it. I mean, he says that he testified that he was jumped into the gang against his will, and when he refused, he was stabbed in the neck. That's not what happened, right?
No, that's not really what happened at all. The judge conjectured in a number of places, just engaging in speculation and opinion at 161, 162,
and
164.
And then he says, in the meantime, he began sporting a number of gang-related tattoos, but I thought the evidence was that he was involuntarily tattooed.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Your Honor. He did not just all of a sudden adopt to life in the gang, as Judge O'Brien seems to depict there. This happened over a period of 5 years where he's desperately searching for safety across his country. His father and family tried to protect him. His father was shot 4 times and left for dead. His throat was slit. A plastic stent was put in his throat to keep him alive when his jugular vein was bleeding him out.
Yeah, that the respondent was willing to engage in criminal behavior as a parent-based criminal record here in the United States. I thought it's a criminal record. There were several arrests, but what were the convictions?
Yeah, Your Honor, if I may, the criminal arrest, and we don't want to get into post-conviction relief efforts, but they are pending in Sonoma County because he basically was self-represented there too, and he was coerced by telling, look, your kids are going to be taken away if you don't enter a plea to that 273.5 conviction, and that was, he was given time served in on a 360-day sentence, but we believe that's going to be overturned because it was completely misrepresented. At that point, he didn't understand English and is very unfair proceeding. But
and the IJ says the respondent never attempted to explain how he remained a member of MS-13 for years, had tattoos on his body, and remained an unwilling participant in the gang activities. But I thought he did explain it. In fact, he said he didn't participate in the gang activities at all, basically. He refused to do it.
Yeah, I think you'll find that in the record at 46 and 47, 48, where he testifies. But, you know, the judge wouldn't know that because we don't think he spent any time there. And he misrepresented and entered into conjecture, which is not permitted by this court's ruling. And he hasn't considered the evidence of torture, which is well established at 291 through 302.
And then there were two incidents where he was told by officials of the government that he was going to be in danger if he walked out or did anything. And that's not in the IJ opinion at all, right?
No, it's not. And then when we get to the aggregate issues, the immigration judge just seems to ignore the record. And there's no analysis as required by this court in analyzing, nor the BIA, which essentially adopted the entire judge's record by not rendering, weighing in on their own analyses, which is required. So we think that the evidence in the record is pretty strong when taken in the totality, particularly when contrasted with the El Salvadorian country conditions in comparison, particularly to this court's decision in Cole.
So one of the things that it seemed the agency did in responding to or in addressing the likelihood of future torture was to suggest that claim was speculative because your client could conceal any tattoos. How do you respond to that?
Well, in the record at 46, 47, 48, testimony from Ruben, which really his testimony, if it's compelling, which it was not challenged, so it has to be accepted as true, should be enough to carry a CAT claim. But essentially what Ruben said about that is it's a common practice in El Salvador for the police, if there's an accident, they'll lift up your shirt. You know, the immigration judge seemed to enter into a speculation that common parlance in El Salvador is the same here. We don't have Terry v. Ohio, where the police require reasonable suspicion to do a stop. Everyone is stopped, and there's so well-established evidence that in El Salvador, people are randomly disappeared and brutally murdered. Their families are tortured, whether it's by gangs or whether it's by vigilante groups that are often made up of police and military people, particularly like Ruben. And then the other thing, the immigration judge failed to aggregate the injury of his deprivation of medical care that he's very concerned about. He's he has strong testimony from others that have told him that if, you know, and Ruben suffers from a heart condition and a lack of oxygen in his lungs. It's in the record as well, at, I believe, 48 thereabouts. But he is very concerned that the evidence shows that his medical care would be deprived, because as soon as they see those gang tattoos, they're not going to give him the treatment that he needs to keep him alive. Now, the other aspect here is there is no differentiation between somebody who's 18 and somebody who's an adult, as the immigration judge states in his opinion, that because Ruben is now 40 years old, that somehow that exempts him from the gang attacks. And that's complete conjecture, which is not permitted by this court's prior rulings concerning the CAT claims. So nothing to indicate the respondent would be identified as a gang member is absolutely false. Gang tattoos forced in him as a child at 45, we'll see that. At 47, 48, the 2018 statements by the consular officer at the Mesa Verde Detention Center indicate that the police and military already know who he is. There's apparent communication. I don't know how the officer at the repatriation terminal knew that he was a gang member and told him, look, if you go out that door, they're going to shoot you and we're going to stand by and do nothing. And that's at 4748. And the judge also seems to contradict himself at in a record on 52, where he says country conditions evidence in the record does not establish that gang members or those with tattoos and indicate membership in a gang are singled out for persecution. And then later, the immigration judge says, well, at 337, he says there is evidence in the record that extrajudicial killings of suspected gang members do happen in El Salvador. So a reasonable to believe standard that the respondent would be able to explain that is just complete speculation and conjecture on the part of the immigration judge. And that's not permitted by the whole litany of cases from Reyes-Melendez to Singh. This court has held for decades. And again, like I say, this, you know, the Terry v. Ohio standard does not apply in El Salvador. The court has made a number of errors here. And I think the reasonable thing to do would be to remand this case with instructions to grant CAT. We would not favor this court necessarily remanding without instruction, because the BIA had their opportunity to review the case. They did not, and the BIA adopted the IJ's decision in its entirety. And we think that any reasonable reviewer of the facts and the country conditions and the other article on tantamount to a death sentence if somebody with his circumstances and similarly situated is removed to El Salvador. And he's also a prior TPS holder. And he lost his TPS in 2006 because he was trying to represent himself. He had no idea what he was doing. And that's why we think that he will at some point be granted TPS or possibly adjustment status once again, as soon as we get through the vacature up in Sonoma County, which undermined his entire future here.
Is that his only conviction? I'm
sorry?
That his only conviction.
It is not his only conviction. There was some kind of an issue. It was a minor issue. I don't remember what it was. But the government, that's a good point, though, Judge Berzon. The government seems to indicate that he had this drug conviction. This fellow has never used drugs or possessed drugs at all. He was on his way home at one point while he was working up in Sonoma County, and this fellow gave him a ride home, had a problem. So they got out of the car. He had to stop on his way to trying to get him to a hearing so he could do his his domestic violence classes due to the plea he entered. And the fellow threw some drugs down in the ground. And when the, some reason the police came, I don't know what the facts were, but he said they weren't his. They were both arrested. There was no conviction there. That was a charge not resulting in conviction.
Well, that's the main point. There was no conviction. All right. Thank you. Your time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Fisher.
Hello, I'm back. So I think I just wanted to make sure that we understood that this case is similar but different. It's a different procedural posture because in this case, the petitioner got through the credible fear step and it went to under the reg, it went to the immigration judge. And then the immigration judge determined that petitioner did not meet his burden of proof for withholding and CAT eligibility. And so the issue here is whether or not substantial evidence supports those two agency determinations. And I'm not going to talk about the particular social groups because petitioner's counsel didn't seem to emphasize that. I wish that the IJ's opinion was clearer in terms of cognizability versus nexus, particularly because I think a lot of the nexus analysis he imported to the likelihood of future torture in his discussion of this particular petitioner and what harm he might face in the future. But circling back to CAT, I think the key fact here, Judge Berzon, is the something that came up in Cole. These tattoos, I think what the IJ focused on is that they're not visible. And I think there are unreported cases on non-visible tattoos. And I can.
But even though they're not visible, this is what's interesting, not visible, but two different officers of the El Salvador government who encountered petitioner seemed to know for some reason of his gang connection. Told him that he was in danger.
Yes, and that obviously was it's troubling in that, but I'm not sure it was fully fleshed out in the testimony as to how they would know, how they knew. And therefore, I'm not sure
For one thing, it appears that his name was on the radio broadcast as being a gang member by some group that was trying to, a vigilante group that was trying to get rid of gang members.
But, Your Honor, I don't know that his
testimony. He was tried for murder and apparently acquitted or let out, and then he was on the radio. So he may have been notorious. I don't know. It appears that there's a reason why his name might be known.
It may be, but Your Honor, I'm not sure that that's established by the evidence in the record or by his testimony. And so what we're left
Is it established that in fact he was tried and in fact he was broadcast on the radio by name as a gang member?
That is what he testified to, yes. But I don't think that that incident, that fact, was linked in any way with the two.
What troubles me the most, which is that is not in the IJ's order decision, nor is the fact that these two officers of the El Salvador government identified him as a gang member and warned him that he was in danger. That's not in the IJ order, and the IJ order is inaccurate with respect to his testimony about what happened to him when he was 12 or 13 years old, because he says that he was cut and beaten because of the gang. He resisted the gang's recruitment efforts, which is not exactly what he said. I said it was a couple of years later, and he appears to become a member of the gang and participated in his activities, but. He says he actually stayed away from them as much as he could and didn't. And when they asked him to do something, didn't do it, which is why he was attacked. And also it says the IJ said that he got himself tattooed in his his testimony was that he was voluntarily tattooed. So there's inaccuracies and huge omissions in the IJ opinion.
I agree, Your Honor, that the IJ's opinion is not as clear as it ought to have been. I still think there's an issue, however, with hidden covered tattoos. To the extent they're hidden and to the extent that he's older now, it's not clear that the evidence establishes that he would be recognized or identified as a target of torture. And I think that's what he needed to show. And
Counsel, could I ask you a question about that? Because it seems to me that that's the problem, that the IJ thought this was going to be a speculative encounter, you know, that might happen. And to me, that's why it's so important that the IJ misunderstood his testimony and failed to account for these other episodes where government officials absolutely knew that he was a prior gang member. Isn't that kind of the point of on appeal here? That seems to be what's so troubling, that was not engaged in.
I think the issue was, if you look at the testimony, it was extremely confused and unclear.
I've read
and it. Hard to follow, and very, very hard to follow. And that's part of his burden, Your Honor, to have laid that out.
If the IJ had said, he said this, but it was unclear and speculative, and I'm not going to credit it, that would be one thing. But if he just ignores it entirely, which is what he did, isn't that a different problem? I don't think it leads Mr. Eaton where he wants to go, to the granting of CAT as opposed to a redo. But why don't, doesn't there at least have to be a redo where the actual evidence in the record is taken into account?
Yes, Your Honor. The other issue here is that the board didn't attempt to clarify. But I think that the speculative finding still rests on the hidden nature of the tattoos and the fact that he's not in a different position than anyone else. And if his testimony didn't lay out why he was, whether he was, I agree that the IJ shouldn't have totally ignored it, but I'm not sure that it doesn't necessarily get him to where he wants to be.
But counsel, I'm confused now about your position.
It may get him to an opinion where somebody does take it to account for him.
That's crazy. Go ahead, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
So we're just trying to follow, and we're not trying to talk over you or each other. It's just difficult with the delay. But counsel, I'm trying to make sure I understand your position in response just a second ago to some questions. You indicated, you know, yes, when Judge Berzon said, you know, we may need to have a do-over so this evidence can be accounted for, because it really hasn't been accounted for at all. And then you said, well, I don't think it gets him where he needs to go, wants to go, which is mean an out-and-out grant of CAT. So I'm trying to figure out whether you're agreeing that this case needs to be sent back so that we can get some findings on the evidence actually presented. Is that your position, or are you still?
No, I'm not going to agree that the case needs to be sent back. I'm going to agree that the IJ's opinion is not as clear as it should have been on a number of issues. But I still think the speculative nature of the postulated harm is solid, and that he hasn't shown that he is in a different position because his tattoos are hidden and because there's no reason from the testimony to surmise.
Well, but there is reason. If you credited the testimony where two officials, there are at least three things that make him that go to that point. One is that his name was on the radio as a gang member. Another is that he was in fact recognized as a gang member by El Salvador official when he came back. And third is that he was recognized as a gang member by an El Salvador council person who he met while he was in a United States detention facility. So it's unusual, but there is evidence, and it's not in the opinion.
That's the big problem. It's not an opinion, but I don't think that evidence ties that there's nothing from the testimony, and I went back and looked at it, it's so unclear, but there's nothing that, it's not established by that testimony that the people who said to him, be careful out there, knew about his tattoos.
No, it's not about tattoos, it's former gang membership. One way or another, the point is whether they could see those tattoos or not, they knew about his former gang membership. They warned him about it. That's the problem.
I'm not sure that is evident from the testimony. It may have been just these people speculating, oh, you be careful out there because if you're a former gang member, but
we've both read it, and the testimony is about being warned by a woman at the border facility that a rival gang member's outside and then he was going to be attacked, that they would try to kill him. I agree. It's clearly English is not his first language. And then the caution is if you go out there, we're going to lock the door. We're not going to let you back in and we're not going to go out and try to save you. So anyway, I just keep coming back to this. The problem we've got is that the IJ, and I'll just give you one more shot, that the IJ says it's speculative, right? That people are going to know that he's in a gang because his tattoos are, he can conceal them. But the problem is we've got a track record again, three times where people did know that he's a gang member. And so, that has, and the IJ hasn't engaged in any of that evidence. That's my problem. And I would appreciate your response.
That I will concede to you that it would have been better if the IJ had engaged with the evidence, but I don't think the evidence suggests what he is saying is that it doesn't show that the woman who, quote, warned him was aware of his gang status at all, his former gang status. And I think that's what the IJ was going to. There's nothing that is
exactly what he said about the council person in the American detention facility. She said to someone else, that guy is a gang member.
I have to beg your pardon, Your Honor, because the testimony was so unclear on this point, but I'm not sure that that's what the implication was, that he knew specifically that guy was a gang member. But I will agree with the panel that I wish that the IJ had discussed this evidence and had it and that it had been fleshed out.
Did the IJ make any findings as to whether the petitioner had been subjected to past torture? And if the IJ didn't do that, does that satisfy the IJ's obligation to consider all of the evidence that could suggest the likelihood of future torture, including past torture? But were there any findings about past torture?
So this was no, and that's that. This raises the same issue that we had in the first case of whether or not the IJ needs to make a definitive determination that past harm rises to the level or constitutes torture. And that finding was missing here also. That's why I said at the beginning that I thought it was important that he imported the nexus analysis to discuss those incidents of past torture, not because you need a nexus in the future, but in analyzing them from that standpoint, you then can decide whether or not you think there's a likelihood of future torture or it happening again. That's what I think these two cases have in common, and interestingly enough. Okay.
So is there a finding in the with regard to the nexus question about whether it rose to the level of persecution?
No. And there's a finding that there was no nexus, but there's no finding as to whether or not it rose to the level of persecution.
And it would be pretty difficult, given the fact that when he was a relatively small child, his throat was cut by these people and his father was shot many times. Now, there may be an acquiescence issue at that point, but as to whether it rises to the level of torture, I mean, maybe the reason it's not there is because it's obvious.
I think that the IJ said at a certain point, and I apologize because our brief has this wrong, but the IJ said if his throat was cut and he was beaten, then it appears then that would rise to the level of past persecution. So then the question, but he didn't make a specific finding as to torture.
It's a vague finding. That he didn't show that he'd be tortured with the acquiescence of the government, sort of glommed together. So it's hard to know whether to talk about with the acquiescence of or whether it didn't rise to the level of torture. Yeah.
I think that's exactly right.
Okay.
I think that's exactly right. But I do think that it's partly because of the nature of what happened to him. The IJ was viewing that as not likely to happen in the future. So, and while there's this long line of cases like Adu and Nuru that spout black letter that the most important factor is whether or not there was torture in the past, I don't think it's fair to say that this IJ hasn't thoroughly analyzed and vetted the past torture factor. He just decided, I think, that it didn't...
there was also a publicly made death.
I didn't get you.
Wasn't there a publicly made death threat to him by this black
shadow?
They're called on the radio, threatening to kill him.
Right, and you're right. The IJ, as you pointed out, didn't engage with that piece of evidence in terms of the likelihood of future torture. There's no question
all
about
right.
that.
If you may please.
Thank you.
This is the argument in Hueso Gilos is over. The case is submitted, and we will go to the last case for argument today, which is Jaffe versus Google.
Thank you, Your Honors.